ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 111 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm glad you're listening. This week I have another pair of terrific interviews. I'll start off with David Schulner, creator of Image's Clone, which is one of my favorite comics coming out today. And there's some plans for it to go to television. He talks about how the book came to be and about some of the things that we might expect in the future. So I'm sure you're going to want to listen to that. Then I interview Peter Hogan, one of the creators of Resident Alien from Dark Horse Comics. I really like that book. It's very much of a concrete feel to it. There's not a lot of superhero type action. In fact, there's none of that. But it's a very gripping, dramatic book. And I'm sure you're going to want to hear what he has to say about that comic. We've got a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I want to welcome to the podcast David Schulner, creator of Clone, which is a Skybound imprint at Image Comics and a great comic, and we might be seeing some of that on television. How are you doing today, David?
I'm good, thanks.
Oh, it's good to talk with you. I've loved the book since it started. I loved Clone. It's such a great idea. It seems like clones are becoming the new vampires somehow.
Exactly.
All kinds of stuff going
on. There's room.
Yeah. Well, I saw that there was a TV show that BBC America did called Orphan Black that had a lot to do with
great
clones.
Great show.
Yeah, which I like.
Great show.
I'm just curious, you as somebody who's interested in clones, so you like that show?
I love it. I think it's fantastic. I mean, I pitched this idea to Skybound almost 7 years ago.
Wow.
I don't even think there was a Skybound. It was just Robert. And so we've been working on this, developing it. And so, you know, when Orphan Black came out, I think 50% of me was really upset that they beat us to it, but the other 50% of me loved the show so much I couldn't really harbor any ill will.
Was it kind of tough to watch it and I'd say, you know, I could use some of that stuff, that story there?
Well, it was tougher because I had already used it.
Oh.
the Clone comic premiered 6 months before Orphan Black did. So I had already, you know, we were probably on issue 5 or 6 when the show premiered, and it's clear we were both playing in the same sandbox, so to speak, because we had been using a lot of the same kind of ideas and tropes and kind of, you know, playing with the human element, too, as opposed to just the science fiction.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was reading an interview that you had done where you talked about the fact that this whole idea for Clone came from the notion that you had basically, your roles had changed as you got older. You know, you were a son, and then you became a husband, and then you became a father. Is that, can you explain a little bit more about how this led you to Clone?
Well, sure. I mean, I think a part of me always feels like I'm the 27-year-old kid who just moved to L.A. trying to break in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's been 12 years and I've done it. And yet there's a part of me that just still feels like that guy, that kid who's just eager to be a part of everything. Mm-hmm. And there's a, you know, and also I'm a father of 2 kids right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how did I get to be a father of 2 kids? And so I feel like there's these different parts of me. And they don't go away. I feel like there's so many different me's living inside of me. Mm-hmm. And so with Clone was, what if I could separate them out? So, you know, someone who's not ready to be a father, mm-hmm. confront someone, you know, who's maybe had 4 or 5 kids, or mm-hmm. someone, you know, who's scared to take a big leap in his life, is confronted mm-hmm. with a version of himself who's done just that. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of all the different parts of your own personality getting mm-hmm. to interact and fight with each other. And mm-hmm. that's basically where the idea came from.
Interesting.
And then, of course, you know, to make it a viable story, you know, that's the idea. Then, you know, what kind of, you know, science, you know, what can I wrap it in? You know, what can mm-hmm. I hang that story on in a science fiction, conspiracy theory, mm-hmm. kind of government conspiracy felt like the kind of the best action-paced drama, that would allow me to slow down at certain points and delve into the character stuff as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love the book. From the moment it came out, I was very fascinated by the topic, and I've been reading them ever since, and what a great story it's been ever since it started off. It's just a terrific comic, and if somebody hasn't been reading it, I highly encourage you to go out and get and read Clone and catch up on it, because it's such good stuff. Now, the basic character of the story is Luke Taylor.
Correct.
And he starts out, I like the way you started off with the first arc. It was basically that, we don't know who the original is. And he's
right.
Going around trying to find out. He doesn't, stuff with his wife. And, of course, there's a baby involved, and they're not exactly sure, who the original is. And as they go along, that becomes a little clearer. When you conceived the book, did you have, did you have it divided up into different arcs like this?
Yeah, the way Robert likes to work is, Before you even start writing one issue, you have the first five issues mapped out in great detail, and then he wants you to also know where your next five are going, in somewhat looser detail. So before I even wrote the first issue, I had a pretty detailed outline of the first five issues, and then a looser outline of the next five.
Clone is the kind of book that I come to really enjoy, and then I'm scared because I enjoy it so much. I'm terrified it's just going to vanish on me, and I'm going to lose it, and I'm going like, "What happened to Clone? I love that book. Where did it go?" But I'm so happy now. You're up to book what, 12 at this point?
Yeah, 12 comes out November 20th.
Mm-hmm.
November 20th, and then our trade paper comes out. The second volume of the trade paperback comes out November 27th. And that collects issues 5, 6 through 10.
Mm-hmm. Has it exceeded your expectations? I mean, did you really expect it was going to go on this long?
This is my first comic book.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really know what to expect, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I remember, spoiler alert, the last image of the first volume answers the question of whether Luke Taylor is an original or is he a clone. Mm-hmm. And at first I wanted to the clones are given a tattoo on their left forearm, and only visible in high resolution ultraviolet light. And my first initial impulse was to write "to be continued" on his forearm. But I was like, what if this is my last issue? So I revealed the answer. So we're pretty, every five issues, we're all, Clone lives by its cliffhangers. We, we love our cliffhangers. And it's really hard to, do the cliffhangers you want to do if you're constantly worried about whether you're going to go away or not.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily, Skybound and Image have been incredibly patient and very upfront about, let's do another five, let's do another round. So we've really been fortunate.
Great. I hope
we would hate to do we would hate to do a great cliffhanger, obviously, and then never come back. Those are the worst.
Now, my understanding is you're a television writer initially, right?
Actually, I started as a playwright. I started playwriting when I was about 18 and all through college, and then after college, and then when I was 25 or 26, I moved out to Los Angeles and started writing for TV.
Mm-hmm.
And then the comic is kind of my third journey.
Okay, very cool. Now, did Robert give you some advice on how to do it, or did you kind of pick it up on your own?
I wish he gave me more. I just remember, in the parking lot, we went out to dinner and met for the first time. And I remember in the parking lot asking him, so how many pages is a scene? Like, how many panels per page? And he said, look, sometimes it takes 7 pages to chop off a head. Sometimes it takes 1 panel. I was like, all right. And I think that was the biggest piece of advice Robert ever gave me.
That's great.
It takes as long as it takes.
Yeah, that's right. You got to write it so it works the best. That's the thing to do.
Exactly.
were you a comic fan before? Or how, you know, had you read superhero comics or had you read stuff before? And that's how you kind of got to this. And I'd like to know, too, how you got to meet Robert Kirkman. Were you friends with him before? How did this all come to be?
So, you know, I read comic books growing up like everyone did. And I had a little different situation because my grandfather, my step-grandfather, was a man named Jack Kamen. Mm-hmm. And Jack was an illustrator for EC Comics in the 50s.
Oh, wow.
And Jack's famous for the Creepshow art that he did.
Yeah.
He did all the interstitial art in the Romero movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like a skeleton and the little kid reading the magazine. That's probably his most famous work. So mm-hmm. I grew up in a way with all of this crazy horror art decorating the walls of my father's house.
Wow.
You know, people being decapitated by chainsaws and like crazy buxom women like being split in half with axes. All part of Jack's, all of his work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of grew up with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I comics fell by the wayside as I started writing plays.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had, I had an idea,
mm-hmm.
probably, for Clone as a TV idea,
mm-hmm.
but I couldn't figure it out. So
mm-hmm.
I brought it to David Engel and David Alpert at Circle of Confusion,
mm-hmm.
who are Robert's managers,
mm-hmm.
and who produced The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I have this show, I can't figure it out. And they said, well, I think the reason you can't figure it out is because it's a comic book. I was
mm-hmm.
like, really? And they said, let's pitch this to Robert and see what he thinks.
Mm-hmm.
And they pitched it to Robert, and off we went, off to the races.
Wow. That's great, because I could see this Clone being a mate show with Walking Dead. You'd have Walking Dead at 9, and then maybe have Clone at 10. I could see that happening, you know?
That'd be nice. I'll take that.
Yeah. Well, I like the way that you balance the character and the action. There's lots and lots of mystery, too. And so, when I open up the book, I have no idea what's going to hit me, and I love that. I'm so sick and tired of reading. Sick and tired of reading stories that I know how it's already going to end or what's going to happen next. When I open up Clone, I have no idea, and I love that. That's one thing I like about it, is just being able to say, now what am I going to find out? I like
that
a lot.
That's great. And we're really, we're really proud in that issue 11, we reset the story. So if you haven't read 1 through 10, you can jump in at issue 11, which came out last month. And, we do a brief recap of everything that's happened in the last year of Luke Taylor's life. And then we start a brand new arc. And you don't need to have any history of what's happened before. You can just jump in at issue 11. And it really is a new way for new readers to kind of jump on board Clone.
Well, I've noticed also, though, that if you know what's going on before, this kind of, you can get more out of the story.
Oh, definitely.
And I like both of that. I like the fact that somebody can jump on. And a lot of comics don't have jumping on points. They have,
I know. This might be our last. The story might get so complicated.
Well, but that's a good thing.
We'll try.
I think that's a good thing, though, because people can, as the word gets out, and especially when the television show comes around. I mean, Walking Dead, the show just getting more and more popular, it goes along. So I'm kind of thinking you're hooked to the right, wagon with this as it's going. And I think there's a lot of good things that you're doing in the book that does scream television at me. It really does when I read the book.
Yeah. I mean, it's not intentional. It's mm-hmm. It's the only way I know how to write. You know what I mean? I couldn't write the comic any other way than how I would write the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, the comic burns through so much story that I brought in two other writers starting on issue 6.
Really?
Friends of mine who've worked with me for about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of friends of mine, Aaron Ginsberg and Wade McIntyre, who done a couple of my TV shows, jumped on board issue 6 because the story, this comic eats through so much story, I just couldn't keep up with it.
Mm.
So I had to bring in story machines, and the three of us just sit around and kind of bat out story ideas and, you know, different places we can take Luke, different journeys, different scenarios.
That must be so much fun.
It's a lot of fun.
You guys get around together, especially if you know each other. Because I had written a script, a bunch of us got gotten together to write about like a Star Trek, because I'm a big Star Trek fan. And we would sit around and bat ideas around. And I was just telling one of them, we hadn't done it in a while. I said, man, I miss those times. We would sit around and we would suggest this, and people would bounce ideas off of each other. And we always thought that what we came up with was vastly better than any of us individually could do.
I agree.
Such a cool thing. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, playwriting is very solitary. And when I started writing for television, which is, you know, which is how that works, you know, you break your story, you come up with your stories as a group, and you have, you know, six or seven voices to kind of elevate your own ideas. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we've started to do in Clone. And it's been really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Now, the TV show got announced at San Diego Comic-Con this year. And you were saying a little bit before we started to record that you've been working on an initial script for it. How much of that can you tell us, or how much of it should we not know at this point?
Let's see. Well, you know, I, you know, nothing's set in stone until it airs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the story uses all the same characters. You get to see some of them in a new light. Mm-hmm. Like our villain in the first, you know, 10 issues is a man named Davis, who is kind of the in charge of shutting the cloning program down. Mm-hmm. And in the TV pilot that I just wrote, you see him before he became bad. Mm-hmm. You see him being roped into this conspiracy for the first time. Mm-hmm. So that was exciting to be able to explore, you know, the origin of some of these characters.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fun.
That's great. I love the fact that the government is so knee-deep involved with this stuff. And, you know, there are certain individuals in the government who are causing things to happen. And I don't want to spoil stuff because I want people to read the book. And I just think it's such a great book. And honestly, it to me feels very relevant on several levels because, you know, we haven't as a society dealt with the notion of cloning appropriately.
No, we keep putting off those bills.
Yeah.
It keeps pushing off those bills that, you know, will either fund embryonic stem cell research or ban it. And it's such a hot button issue that the Senate just keeps sending the bills back to committee, won't even vote on them.
I also like the fact that this is a very sci-fi concept. You don't get a lot of sci-fi in comics these days. It's mostly Long Johns, and I like Long Johns, but I like sci-fi too. And so when that was one of the things that drew me right to the book. I said, man, this is going to be science fiction. And it's got this wonderful balance of science fiction versus, you know, real-life characters that we understand and we feel like we know, and lots of action going on. So it's just got a whole lot of things going on. It's kind of like those old shows that used to have the plates on the top of the sticks and they'd be spinning around and they'd start to wobble and you have to run over and spin the stick. It's kind of, I feel like the whole issue is like that. I'm going like, now what's going to happen? We've got to spin this other plate in another a little faster now because we need that kind of stuff. So God, it's such a great book on so many different levels. I did want to also mention the art because the art is kind of unique as far as comic books go these days. It's very clear and it's got a kind of a, I don't know exactly how to phrase it, but it's got a different feel to it than other comics.
It's hyper detailed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Juan Jose Rip is our artist.
Mm-hmm.
Juan, I don't know how he does it. Mm-hmm. Each panel on every page packs so much detail. He doesn't, you know, I'm like, Juan, like, the background's not important. And he's like, it is important. And he's right. Like, every tile of the ceiling in every panel, you know, we wrote a character named Eric who is a clone and he's covered himself from head to toe in tattoos in order to not look like a clone. So he's tried to, you know, disfigure himself as much as he could so he wouldn't feel like just a copy or a replica. And so we thought, okay, we'll do like one great shot of this tattooed clone in a tank top or something, and we'll get to see all his tattoos, and then we'll put a shirt on him so Juan doesn't have to do a full body tattoo in mm-hmm. every panel. Juan refused to cover him up in any way. And
wow.
for five issues, it takes place in summer, mm-hmm. and this clone is wearing nothing but a tank top and jeans, mm-hmm. muscle, and every inch of his body is covered in tattoos, and Juan drew that in every panel for
wow.
5 issues.
Wow.
It was insane. It's amazing.
Well, I have to say that it gives the book a realistic feel to it. It makes me feel like this isn't a comic so much as these are like photographs.
Yeah.
And I like that. Oh, it makes me feel very, like this is all very realistic and all very happening before my eyes. And I think that's one of the things that it works with your plots and your other folks' plots very well because, man, it's just, I could swear I'm sitting on the ground watching this stuff happen right in front of me.
It's a high concept idea, but it's a very grounded world and grounded characters. And, you know, there's a love story at the heart of it between Luke and his wife. Mm. And, you know, will he get back to her? You know, this other clone, this tattooed up clone named Eric, like can't help but be drawn to Luke's wife. And you realize it's because these clones are genetically predisposed to love, you know, our DNA chooses our attraction for us in many circumstances. Mm-hmm. And so then Amelia, Luke's wife, has to question, does Luke love me for who I am? Mm. Or because these other clones love me, is Luke just genetically engineered to love me and I'm not special at all? So we try to raise all these interesting questions and not just the, you know, not just the government conspiracy or the cloning sci-fi part of it, but the human questions at stake as well are really important to us.
You know, I have to ask a question just because this thing's always fascinate me. You know, I noticed that all of Luke's clones tend to be male. Might there be a female out there someplace, a female Luke out there?
Issue 11.
Okay, because that just came out. Okay. Yeah, these are the kind of
things. Spoiler alert for issue 11. Pick it up.
These are the things that keep me awake at night. I kind of lay there going, wait a minute, they're all men. Is there a woman? Is there a Lukette out there someplace or something? So I'm glad about that because good stuff. Now, from what I understand, we will be seeing the wife again.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
She's kind of gone off in a different direction than what I expected. So
yeah,
she has. Okay, I don't want to spoil anything.
Keep all those characters in play.
Yeah, oh, I love it all because it's such a great, well put together book, and I'm so happy that it's been optioned as a television show. And I can't wait to hear more about this. I know you're preparing things to get turned in. You were saying it might be on NBC should things go well.
Yes, NBC has bought Clone, and we are developing it for next year.
Wow.
For the next TV season.
Oh boy! Oh my!
But,
I can't wait.
For me, the comic is, you know, I do TV as my day job. Mm-hmm. So the comic to me is more exciting than the TV show because that, you know, that's what I do for a living. The comic is kind of my newfound joy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my joy these days.
Well, you're a storyteller. So this gives you another way to tell stories.
Exactly.
That's coolness. Now, I've got to ask, in all the reading that I've done of the book, I never really saw anywhere, maybe I missed it, how many clones of Luke Taylor are there, or do we know?
We don't know for sure, but I always thought there was about 100.
Okay.
Because we know that a lot of them get killed in... I won't reveal which issue. A lot of clones get killed. A lot of clones make it out alive. So I'm thinking around 100, 150.
Wow. Okay, that's a lot of clones. I like the way that you point out that each one seems to be a different aspect of Luke's personality. And he has to kind of look at them and go, wait a minute, is that really inside of me?
One of the big villains in the second arc. I'm sorry, the big villain in the first arc is a clone named Patrick, whose job it is to kill all the remaining clones. Mm-hmm. And he says very early on to Luke, whatever I'm capable of, so are you.
Mm.
you know, when Luke tries to distance himself and says, "I'm not a killer," Patrick just looks at him and says, "But you are." Because I am.
Creepy. But you know that you're examining the human condition as a Star Trek fan. I love stuff like that. And so that's one of the things I'm enjoying is I'm reading this thing and you're examining what does it mean to be human? You know, all these different aspects of humanity, you know, that I do find it interesting that the clones come out with different aspects of them. That you don't get all the clones acting the same. You get several of them have certain things that is that. I mean, how much did you base all this in science? I mean, or is this kind of is this more of a fictional idea of cloning rather than say going to a scientist?
Don't forget, it's a lot of nature versus nurture too. You know, every human being on the planet shares 99.9% of the same exact DNA. 99.9%. I mean, in a very real and profound way, we're all clones to begin with. 0.1% of us is different.
Wow.
And that's crazy to me. But look how vastly different we are. 7 billion people with a 0.1% variance in their DNA. It's kind of remarkable. So we do want to play with nature versus nurture and, you know, all the ideas of what makes us who we are.
Okay, so you have the two first arcs pretty much together. Since you've been writing and you've got the other folks helping you, have you come up with other ideas to go forward, you know, say past issue number 20?
Let's see. We have arced out, we just arced out issues 16 to 20, which we'll start writing next month. And then what we try to do is each cliffhanger, you know, each episode, each issue is a cliffhanger. And then we try to do a, you know, a big game-changing cliffhanger every 5 issues. And what that does is it helps us, so we know exactly where we're going in the next issue. So each cliffhanger really platforms us for the next story. So now that we have a big game changer at 20, we know what 21 through 26 are going to be.
Very good. Jake, this is the kind of writing I enjoy because I can just feel that there are many stories now. You set the groundwork, and now there's all these stories springing out of that groundwork.
And we're really excited because issue 11 really, you know, issue 10 really culminates and wraps up the, you know, the major plot points and the major obstacles facing Luke. And issue 11 starts him on a whole new path. And we're really excited about that.
It's a very cool book. It's just for somebody like me who's a sci-fi kind of guy, it's so much fun to see the humanity involved and to see the fast-paced storytelling and the interesting characters who interact with each other. I just think it's such a great book. It's clone, and you know, it could be coming to a television near you sometime soon.
Exactly.
So I would say get in on the ground floor. You can get 2 trades and pretty much catch up. And so I would say get to your local store and pick up Clone and be sure to read it because, man, it's good storytelling. It's great stuff. So do you have any other projects in the works or is this keeping you pretty busy, I guess?
It's keeping me pretty busy. Yeah.
Well, now you get to – not only do you have the comic, but you have the TV show going on. So you're pretty much involved in the whole thing and you probably will be for some time to come.
I have a lot of TV projects, but Clone is my one and only comic.
Okay. Should Clone come to an end, would you like to do another comic?
I can't imagine my life without a comic book now.
Okay.
I've been bitten by the bug.
Oh, okay. Very good.
There'll definitely be more.
Well, you're definitely doing a terrific job. I really love the book, and I love what you're doing. I can't wait to see the TV show. I'm just dying to see it. So, David, I wish you a lot of success, and, man, keep it up. These are great things. I love the whole business of it, and I just can't wait for the next issue to come out all the time. So much success, and, boy, I can't wait.
Thanks for having me on the show, Wayne.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast.
so you can keep reading your comics.
Welcome to the podcast, Peter Hogan, one of the creators behind one of my favorite books that's out right now called Resident Alien. And you've done other works too on like 2000 AD and other things for DC's Vertigo as well. How are you doing today, Peter?
I'm doing fine, yeah.
That's good to talk with you. Why don't we go ahead and start off with Resident Alien, because that's the book I'm dying to get to.
Okay.
I always noticed that when you folks over in the UK get involved with things and name things, you have a lot more precise way of dealing with words than we do over in the States. We want to come up with whole new words. You guys look at different shades of meanings much more than we do. So when I saw this book was called Resident Alien, when I picked it up and started to read it, I was surprised by the content. It wasn't what I was expecting. Do you want to talk a little bit about, why don't you first tell everybody who may not have read it, what Resident Alien's all about?
Okay, well, the clue is kind of in the title. It's about an alien who's been living on Earth for a few years. His ship crash landed, as far as we know, and he's stuck here. So although we portray him right throughout the book as an alien, it's very evident that the people around him don't see him that way. He must appear normal to them. Maybe he's affecting their perception somehow. So even so, he was like living the life of a recluse, hoping not to attract too much attention, and then in the first series, events conspire to sort of draw him out. He's been his cover identity is that of a doctor, and he ends up becoming the doctor in a small town called Patience, and where there happen to be some murders going on. And that kind of intrigues him, and he gets drawn into playing amateur detective. And it's one of those things that it's a bit like Sherlock Holmes in that, you know, he's bored. So something that will stimulate him and interest him, you know, is, you know, something that he gets instantly addicted to. He's waiting for, in the hope that one day he's going to be rescued by his people. But, you know, it could be a long wait. So he's got to find something to do to occupy his time. And this solving crimes thing seems to be it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really kind of interesting to me because when he arrives on Earth, as I understand it, he didn't really understand much about humanity. It wasn't that like he was like looking at the planet. He just happened to crash here.
Well, as we'll find out in future series, he did come here for a purpose, but you're right, he doesn't know that much about humanity, so he very much has to kind of, you know, educate himself on the hoof as to what people are all about. And, you know, again, he gets drawn in, he gets curious. The whole sort of topic of murder and crime, you know, fascinates him, and he's been reading books and watching movies for years about those subjects. So to actually sort of deal with real murder is something he finds very exciting.
Now, one of the things I love about the book so much, and I am a huge proponent of variety, is that this is much more like Concrete in the feel of it. Have you ever read Paul Chadwick's Concrete?
Yeah.
This has got very much of that feeling of drama as opposed to action. And I love that because, you know, it's so nice to see somebody who sometimes dialogue bogs down a comic book, but with your dialogue, it propels the story forward. And I kind of think that's a great change of pace for what I'm used to reading. And I love my Long John's books, But I've got to tell you, it's nice to read something that's different, and you do a very strong job of, you and you and the artist do a great job of propelling things along without, and it's not dull to me, and I just think that is such a great thing, such a nice change of pace for a comic book.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment. Yeah, I mean, I've got a fondness for superheroes too, but, you know, I loved Concrete and, you know, Tintin and Love and Rockets. There's all kinds of things that comics can be, you know, that aren't necessarily dependent upon action. You know, like you say, you know, drama. Drama is much more of a part of most people's lives than, you know, than action. Action is the thing you don't want. You know, action is somebody mugging you or robbing your house or something, you know.
Yes. I love that he is drawn into all this stuff just by the fact that he doesn't want to do it. Everybody kind of comes to him and says, look, you're not doing anything. Help us do this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And as he gets pulled into it, the more he comes to understand, you know, what's all involved with forensics, and which also he's learning about humanity as he's doing this kind of stuff. And I actually think this is a great thing for him to be able to study humanity up close and personal like
that. Yeah, no, very much so. I mean, you know, he is kind of a doctor on his own world. He's a biologist, so, you know, he's used to studying, you know, alien species, but I don't think he's ever encountered anything quite like Earth people before.
Well, we haven't encountered anything like Earth people before either.
Not quite, yeah. That's one of the things I think people can relate to about it, is the fact that you've got this guy who, you know, is visibly an alien, and yet he's kind of the most human person in the book.
See, I wanted to touch on that because that actually is something I find really interesting. When I've seen the book described and I've heard you talk about, and I've read you talking about it, it's usually coming across with the thing that he's got an extra ability to be sympathetic, you know, empathy and things like that. And I always kind of wonder if you know, it's kind of a commentary on humans that we're not nearly as empathetic as he is. I always thought that. Because he's so sympathetic and he's interested in what other people are thinking and doing, he very much is. I wish we were more like him on some level.
Yeah.
That's the thing that really drives me crazy about him, because a lot of the humans are kind of like thick compared to him when he's dealing with them.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, tragically a lot of people are, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things that we put in the story is that he's not exactly telepathic, but, you know, he has... he's very, very observant, so he's picking up on a lot of things like body language and just micro movements. He knows when people are lying, that kind of thing. But, you know, he has empathy, and B, he has kind of like a willingness to have empathy. He wants to understand.
Mm-hmm. So you think that's what separates him from the humans in the book?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, there are plenty of nice people in this world, but, you know, I think the vast majority of people just kind of like want to get on with their own lives. They don't actually think too much about other people. They're just kind of obsessed with themselves.
So on some levels, he's like a commentary on what humanity could be.
Yeah, which is the thing of, you know, he's an outsider, so, you know, that's kind of the role that he's playing.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was reading one of the things when you all wanted to start making this comic was that the artist wanted to draw an alien.
Yeah. Well, the thing was that Steve and I had worked together before. We did stuff for Vertigo for The Dreaming, which was the Sandman spinoff title. Mm-hmm. And we got on really well, and I love Steve's work. I've loved it ever since seeing the Bo Jeffrey saga way back when in Warrior. So, like I said, I wanted to work with Steve again, so we were talking. I said, well, what do you want to do? And he said he wanted to do something involving aliens, because that whole area kind of intrigued him. Mm-hmm. So I went off and thought about it, and this is what I came up with.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got a huge kick, because when I think of the term resident alien, I think of something else. I think of, especially in America, we have this, you know, everybody's debating about securing the borders and illegal immigrants and all this kind of stuff. And so I thought, is this like going to be like a Hispanic guy or something? I couldn't figure what it was. So when I actually saw it was an alien, I was very happily surprised. I said, oh, this is going to be really interesting. And it is very thoughtful. It's one of the things, one of the words I used to describe this book. It doesn't look it doesn't take things too simply, you know, which many superhero comics, everything is like straightforward. There's no hidden things. On this one, there's lots of different levels going on. And there's some, you know, some of the humans are more perceptive than others. Like his nurse has actually looked at him and begun to see through his disguise, or however he's able to go that. But in the latest series, and there's some big development. I want to get to that because that's a huge thing. You guys have been doing these in the terms of miniseries rather than having an ongoing comic. And, you know, I have to say that quality is worth waiting for. And that, for me, this is the great thing. I'd rather have a miniseries that's done well and have it come out occasionally than to have a monthly comic that the quality drops. And so I think you guys are doing a great job. It's smart to do miniseries like this so you guys can put things together at your pace. And when it's ready, we'll be here waiting for it. So I think that's great.
Yeah, well, you know, Steve isn't the fastest artist in the world, but, you know, it was always right from the beginning, you know, I mean, we're both very happy with Dark Horse, and Dark Horse loved this the minute they saw it. And so the plan was always kind of like a long-term thing, but to do it, as you say, as a series of mini-series, rather than try and keep to some schedule that we probably wouldn't have been able to keep to. So, you know, as I speak, Steve is drawing the third series, and I'm writing the fourth one.
Wow. Well, that's good to hear, because I can't wait to see more of this stuff. It's a great, great book. It's so much fun and adds that variety that I need to my reading. Now, the thing that interests me is that this thing started out as part of Dark Horse Presents, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I pitched it to Dark Horse just as they were planning to relaunch Dark Horse Presents. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Mike Richardson saw it and basically, you know, wanted to run it, you know, quite soon on in that series. I can't remember what issue we kicked off in, but it was quite early on.
Mm-hmm. And then they collected those into issue number zero.
Yeah.
Now, how many miniseries have you guys done so far? Two?
Two, yeah.
Two so far. Okay. Well, the first one was called what?
The first one's called Welcome to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is The Suicide Blonde.
Yeah. That one I really, really liked. And I have to say, you know, some comics keep me awake at night, and this is one of them. I was sitting there thinking, how in the world can, you know, if other people can't see him, is that sort of a thing between him and humanity? What would happen if somebody actually, like, turned a video camera on him? Would they see him? And we learned that answer in The Suicide Blonde.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating to me is that, you know, basically, and I don't want to spoil too much for it, because you've got the mystery going on, so this is kind of an undergoing, a second storyline. And let's just say that technology, he doesn't seem to be able to protect himself from the way he can with human perception.
Well, he can in terms of, you know, if he knows that there are like video cameras, CCTV cameras, whatever, he can, you know, jam them. But, you know, somebody just accidentally turning around and taking a photograph and he's not aware of it, you know, they've got him.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, see, I don't want to spoil too much, but at the end we find out that not only is this photographer involved in this stuff, we come to discover that it looks like the men in black from the government are also involved. And I just, you know, this whole thing's going to come crashing down on him in the future. And I just, you know, I'm dying to see what happens. How's he going to deal with all this, you know? So I just think that the way that ended just whetted my appetite for more. I just thought that was so well written. You know, not only do we find out what the murder mystery resolution was, but we also get pulled into the next miniseries. So I love the way that ended. It was such a terrific ending. You know, this book is just one of those books that just pulls me along. I got to turn the page quick to find out what's going on next. I love that in a book. I just think that is such a great comic.
Good. Well, thank you very much.
Now, can you give us any idea? Now, you're talking about he's working on the third miniseries.
Yeah.
Do you have a title for that miniseries yet?
Yeah, we do. It's called The Samhain Mystery. And we kind of tease that a bit in the second storyline as to, you know, who and what Samhain is. And so you'll be finding out more about that in the third one.
Okay. Don't spoil anything, because
I won't.
I always ask people, don't get in trouble on my account. I want to be. I don't mind a tease. I don't want to spoil. That's the thing I don't really want. Even though even though the website I work for is called Major Spoilers, I would much rather buy the book and read the thing myself and enjoy it so much. I also wanted to tell you, too, is that a lot of times I get recommended books, and this is one of those books that a certain store that I go to in the Washington, D.C. area, the people like to recommend books, and this is one of the ones that they recommended was Resident Alien, because as I said, I had this total misperception as to what it was about, and these people kept telling me what a great book it was, and I said, well, okay, I'll buy the Zero issue, and I'll see what's going on.
Well, you know, I hear that a lot, you know, from the people in stores are being really kind of supportive and recommending it to people, which is great to hear, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope they keep doing it, because that's the way I found out about it, was to hear that. Because, you know, it was, unfortunately, being an American, my perception of what that phrase meant was totally different from what it was.
Well, you know, I knew an English guy who was living in New York, and I kind of wondered how he was managing to stay there, and did he have a green card or what? And anyway, he told me that he had this Resident Alien card. And this was years and years ago, and I just thought it was really funny, because I immediately pictured, you know, an alien living in the world. And it took me years and years to come up with the story to go with the title, but there you go.
Well, see, that's a good thing, because, you know, this is why I think different writers can approach things differently, and I love the unique takes on things. I was talking to one of your fellow countrymen, Sai Datan, who was telling me he was watching a show about slaughtering pigs, and he came away with this whole idea for a comic book series called, I think it's Slaughterman's Creed, it's called.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, you know, if I watched a show about slaughtering pigs, I don't know if I'd come up with a comic book series doing that. You know?
Yeah, well, you never know where things will come from, you know.
Yeah, so. Isn't that funny? That's kind of cool, because I did that. It's a very profound book. It's just something I highly recommend to everybody. If you are a little tired of superheroes and you want to try something that's a little more thoughtful and a little more, you know, dramatic in that sense, then I always say get Resident Alien. I love the way that Harry looks, the alien. Now, he's got this purple head with black eyes and pointed ears. And, you know, if I saw someone like that, it would creep me out. But the thing that always interests me is that we don't know what he's making himself look like, really, a lot
no.
of the time.
No.
It's just that we see this alien coming up and holding people's hands and stuff like that as a doctor. And I'm sitting there going, like, I'm going to look at my doctor a little differently moving forward.
Well, I think it's very powerful. We kind of made a conscious decision to show him throughout as an alien. And we did think, you know, well, maybe we could sort of show him, you know, as other people see him. And, you know, but maybe they will see him differently, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it's a very powerful kind of thing, because even when there's nothing happening, you know, there's an alien on the page.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes that creeps me out, I have to tell you.
Oh, he's a nice guy.
Well, he is, but, you know, a purple guy with pointed ears and black eyes, I'd have a time getting used to that, to be frank. But he's such a nice guy about the whole business, and he's very compassionate and very, you know, he's very intelligent and all this kind of stuff. So I always am intrigued when aliens are actually smarter and better than we are at being human. So I always like, that's a very Star Trek way of doing things.
Well, you know, I think there'd been this like long history of showing aliens as the bad guys, you know, in movies and TV shows and all the rest of it. They're always trying to invade us or, you know, abduct us or do something terrible to us. And I thought, well, you know, it's a long time since we've seen an alien as a good guy, so let's give that a try. And it seemed to sort of touch a nerve or something. People really responded to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did. I mean, when I looked at them and I started to see, and, you know, of course, comics are a good way to do this. I have to say, though, this screams television show to me. You know, this would be kind of a neat thing if it was actually became a TV series.
Well, it's been under discussion for a long time. I mean, that's all I can tell you at this moment. Yeah, but yes, people are certainly thinking about it.
Well, I certainly would like to see this on television. And of course, your fun would be you'd need like somebody being able to do the alien makeup all the time.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I it does kind of. I mean, I always think with things like that, you know, if unless CGI is done really well, you'd probably be better off doing it with makeup. But, you know, that would mean somebody would have to spend, you know, 5 hours in a makeup chair every day.
Yeah.
But there you go. It might be worth it.
Always reminds me of, like, Space Precinct. which was a show, and I'm blanking on the name of the gentleman who did that. He also did like Fireball XL5. Jerry Anderson,
yeah.
Yeah, because people didn't like the makeup, and I was like, you know, that doesn't bother me at all. The story's so good, I don't care about that.
Yeah.
A lot of people just didn't seem to like it. Now, what about his nurse? It seems to me like his relationship with the nurse is deepening. And she's the one that kind of was able to begin to perceive that he wasn't exactly the way that he looks.
Yeah.
Is that relationship going to develop?
Yeah, that's going to develop. I mean, it's going to, the exact nature of their relationship, I think, is going to puzzle them for quite a while. And, and it's not going to develop quickly, but, you know, they're in it together for the long haul.
Okay. Now, one of the things I also enjoyed was the timing of the introduction of the Men in Black, because over here in the United States, you know, the NSA and snooping on us and all
that
stuff's going on. And I thought, man, this book could not be out at a better time, because they're looking and they see all this stuff over the internet and what's going on when the image goes out.
Yeah.
And I thought, boy, I said, you couldn't have timed that any better.
That was lucky coincidence, but there you go.
Now, do these get collected in the trades? Is that how?
Yeah, they do. The first one's already out. That's called Welcome to Earth. And then the Suicide Blonde will be out in trade, I think, in May, April or May next year.
Okay. Any idea when the next miniseries is going to kick in?
Sometime next year, but I don't know when yet. I think they want to keep sort of running the Zero issue in Dark Horse Presents. So the last I heard, that we were waiting for a slot in that. But it'll definitely kick off next year. Hopefully it'll all come out next year.
Now, do you guys finish everything before, do you finish all the chapters before you go to press, or do you get started once you've got a couple of the chapters in and then do it?
No, I think they pretty much finish it. I mean, I think Steve might be finishing off the last issue when, you know, the first one comes out, but, you know, it's a fair ways along.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've got a lot of experience working in like 2000 AD and other things like that. What other projects are you working on that we should be aware of?
Right now, not that much that I can tell you about. I've got the Tom Strong series coming out still from Vertigo, and the last issue of that will be out, I think, on New Year's Eve. And the last issue, I'm really pleased with it. It makes sense of the rest of the series, if you know what I mean. It ties everything together. So hopefully there'll be more Tom Strong, but I haven't heard about that yet. We also republished in January. We've got a trade coming out of Terra Obscura, which is the series that I co-plotted with Alan Moore. And Yannick Paquette did the art for, and we did two series of that, and they're being collected in this trade coming out in January. And other than that, there's about three or four things that are in various stages of development, which, like I say, I can't really tell you about.
Okay. Well, that's a good thing, because then they're likely to happen. Whenever people can't talk about it, that means that these good things are likely on the way, and so I'm real happy about that. I got to ask you, since you brought it up, what was it like to work with Alan Moore? Because that man's like decades ahead of the rest of us.
Yeah, yeah.
Thinking these things out.
Well, it was a wonderful experience. I mean, the thing is, I've known Alan for over 20 years, long over 20 years. Before I got into writing comics, I was a journalist, and I interviewed Alan a couple of times. And we sort of hit it off. And so when I did start writing comics, I'd send the ones that I was really proud of for him to have a look at. And as a result of that, he ended up hiring me to write for the ABC line when he was doing that. So I did a couple of issues of Tom Strong. I did a Tesla Strong special. Mm-hmm. And then we did the Terra Obscura stuff, which was the Nador superheroes, the Fighting Yank and the Black Terror and all of those guys, mm-hmm. which were out of copyright. And Alan had revived them in Tom Strong. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I said, I thought there was a lot more potential in it. And Alan didn't really have the time or the inclination to do another series himself, so he suggested that we collaborate. So we used to plot things out together face to face, and then I'd go away and write the scripts. And as you can imagine, I learned a hell of a lot in the process.
Because I would just imagine even being able to sit down and talk with him must be some kind of an uplifting experience, because he reminds me a lot of Grant Morrison in the sense that there's a lot of depth to the thinking that goes on in there.
Yeah,
yeah. It must be fun just to pick his brain and say, well, what about this and what about that?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I mean, I think, you know, when we were doing those series, you know, we'd be together for like 4 or 5 hours. And we'd spend half of the time working on the story and the other half just talking about everything under the sun and having a really good time, you know, laughing ourselves silly and, you know, no, it was great. And the other thing is that, you know, when Alan was working on things that he was really pleased with, he'd kind of like act it out for you. He'd do the scene. So I got to hear bits of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, like, or Promethea or whatever, like months before it actually came out as a comic.
That must have been fun.
It was fun, yeah.
That's great. Well, anyway, the last question is, I get an understanding that you have a nickname that people call you the Count.
Oh, that dates back to when I first started writing. I was nocturnal, like a lot of people. Neil Gaiman used to be as well, and it's just easier to write at night. It's quieter. I can't do it anymore now because I have young kids. But back in the day, yeah, I did used to sort of work right through the night, and so there were friends of mine who did nickname me the Count.
Because I have a friend of mine who draws comics,
yeah.
And he always tells me he draws at night because he doesn't get bothered by phone calls or emails.
Yeah, yeah.
He gets a lot more done at night, and so I found that really entertaining that you got called that for a while.
Yeah, there's not many artists that work at night, but there are a few. Brian Bolland used to, and I heard recently Jack Kirby used to as well.
Wow, that's interesting. So you're in good company there.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Well, keep up the great work, because Resident Alien is one of those wonderful books out there. I think as many people know about it, I still think there are a lot more people that could be exposed to it and really enjoy it. So I'm on a countless mission to tell the people, please read this book, because it's such a good thing, and it'll expand your horizons and make you think differently. And I think that a good comic like Resident Alien, that's what it should be doing. So please keep up the great work.
Well, I'll keep writing them as long as people keep buying them, so...
Well, count me in there. I'll be in there for sure. So thanks so much.
Good man. Okay, and thank you.
And that wraps up another episode. Be sure to be back next week when I'll have more interviews and as we continue to draw to a close 2013. But until then, keep reading your comics.